Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. We've got a lot to go over today, a lot to talk about. We'll talk a little bit about Summer League, but also what's next for the Lakers. They've got some work to do. The roster, it's not finished. So a lot of stuff for us to dive into. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you do hit the subscribe button right here on the YouTube channel. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. He's Jovan Buha, Pete Zayas. I'm Trevor Lane. Guys, how are we doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Excited about what happens next.
Exactly. We got Summer League, at least in Las Vegas, on the horizon. So looking forward to this weekend and seeing all of your beautiful faces in person.
I can't wait. This is going to be a blast being out there in Summer League. But you know what? I was just talking about this over on the Basketball Bulletin. We were talking about where LeBron's ultimately going to wind up. Whatever is the most inconvenient moment for all of us at Summer League, that is when he will make his decision known. I figured out that is predestined at this point.
We had that That's one year happening. With the Kawhi signing and then the earthquake in Vegas. Like, that was a wild one. You're absolutely right. That's totally when it's going to happen.
That was absolutely an insane. The earthquake, the Patrick Beverly standing on the table proclaiming the next era was his and all of that. I don't know if we'll quite get that eventful of a Summer League, but speaking of Summer League, the California Classic. The Lakers have now played three games in the California Classic. I don't want to spend a ton of time on them because it's Summer League, but what stood out to you guys from what we've seen from the Lakers? Pete, let's start with you. What are your big picture takeaways from what we've seen so far from the Lakers in Summer League?
Oh, man, awesome to see Cameron Carr really look smooth as a shooter, as an athlete. I was wondering, is he an athlete that can shoot? But no, he's a shooter who's also an athlete. And so seeing his ability to get decent shot volume up and get good shots up while our guards stink. I think we had Ryan Russillo starting at point the first game. And just our point guards just all stink. And so it's like Adu ends up being our main on-ball guy for a couple of games. But they got better on the defensive end. You know, Mignon had a really good game in the last one. So ended up going 2-1, Jovan, which didn't look like it was going to go that way after that Warriors game. They stomped them in that one. But, yeah, some things to like for sure.
I think Cameron Carr has been the standout by far for me, where he looks ready for a rotation role right now. I've been joking on my show, like, is he already the seventh best Laker right now after the DA trade? Like, I think it's within the realm of possibility that he is. But I, for me, it's more trying to like extrapolate what he is doing into a Lakers context and the way that they're using him off of the ball and just the way he's curling around screens and going into his mid-range jumper and the lift and just how high his release is based on how high he can jump. Like, I just look at that and I'm like, there's so many different ways that they could use him offensively that, you know, I don't think he's going to get a ton of on-ball reps with the parent team, right? Like, he's going to be an off-ball player, but between the pin downs, the curls, the you know, cuts, like getting out in transition, I think all those things are real ways that the Lakers can use him, and seeing him thrive in a variety of ways has been really encouraging to me. And I think it's something that as long as he can defend or you know, defend at like a baseline level and bring motor and leverage his length to a degree, like offensively, he's already there. It's just going to be a question to me of like, can he play as mistake-free basketball defensively as possible to earn the trust of JJ and get on the floor?
Yeah, we've seen teams try to exploit his lack of strength. We had our old friend RJ Davis got one on him in last night's game, was able to take him baseline and then get an and one. But we've also seen teams try it, and he actually did pretty well with those situations. He's done a nice job walling off on the baseline drive and absorb contact and all of that. But I think that the most impressive thing for me with him is that he doesn't look like the game is too fast for him at all. He doesn't look like he's being sped up. It looks like everything is very natural. Everything is very smooth with him right now. And oftentimes that's a big adjustment for young players to make when they get thrown into a situation in Summer League where everybody's going 150 miles per hour. It's adjusting to the environment around them. And it doesn't feel like he really needs to do that. He, in fact, out of everybody on the team, he looks like the guy that is perhaps the most experienced of anybody out there on the floor. Now, like with Adu Thiro, maybe he's actually going too fast for the game. But Cameron Carr has looked very, very comfortable with the speed of the game, the physicality of the game. It hasn't seemed to bother him. He's getting to his spots, no problem getting his shots. Are there still some tweaks and things that can be worked on? Yeah, some of the defensive reads and things like that, but it very, very encouraging what we're seeing out of him so far. Right now, you look at Cameron Carr and you say, ah, that's why the Lakers paid money to move up one spot and make sure they got that guy. And I'm really excited what he can ultimately be for this team moving into the future. Is there anybody else on the roster that you look at and you say, this guy could maybe in a pinch be a player that steps onto the floor for the Lakers this year?
Is no okay? An okay answer to that? Yeah, like Adu's been pretty wild. He's got, I think, a decent amount to learn. And he's hit the floor pretty hard 3-4 times over the course of this summer league. I like Kaluma. He played for South Bay last year. Watson got that put back in the game winner in the second game. But I don't know, Jovan, you got anybody there? Mannion had a really nice game yesterday. He's somebody that if he can get that jumper going, you know, he can certainly defend at that level.
Yeah, there's been a push from a segment of Lakers Twitter to get Mannion on one of these 3 or 4 year minimum deals with like a team option or non-guaranteed and lock him up because of the defensive upside. And then last night he showed the offensive upside with the 24 points. He's interesting. Like he's got a really unique offensive game because sometimes he's like moving in slow motion and he just has this like quirky, you know, just the angles he takes on drives and he's not blown by you. Like he's almost got some Kyle Anderson to his game on some of the drives where he's like deselling and kind of moving at his own pace, and it somehow, I mean, it works, I guess, in summer league. I don't think it would work on an on-ball, you know, on-ball level at the NBA level. So to me, it's just like, how does his jumper, like, he hit a step, you know, sidestep three yesterday, hit a couple catch and shoot threes. So if he can continue to develop as a shooter and an off-ball threat, like the defense to me is NBA level. It's just, can he be passable offensively? And you know, that's TBD. And then I agree that Adu has been pretty erratic and to me still looks like he needs a lot of time to get to a rotation level.
Yeah, I agree 100%. On Adu Thiro, he's been a little bit disappointing in that sense, but I thought he made a nice adjustment from game one to game two, slowed down a lot more, was a much better game passer. Two. Yeah, we saw him much better there. So he's going to be a work in progress. Mannion, I'm kind of split on him because I do agree that he is an NBA level defensive player right now and could step on the floor and do those sorts of things now. You do have him on a two-way contract. So what you could do if you're the Lakers is just burn through all of his two-way eligibility. And then if at that point you say, okay, he is still an NBA level player, let's bump him up to a full roster spot. Maybe you make that decision then. If there was an opportunity though, to get him on a keyword here, key phrase, team friendly deal right now, maybe that's something that you look to do. If you can get some non-guaranteed money, you get this to be a not like a 2-year deal and then you can get out of it, or a 1-year deal and a player option on the second year or something like that. But I'm talking a 3-year, a 4-year deal with non-guaranteed money on it to give the team upside, protect the team from any downside. If you need to move on from him, you can. If you can get him on something like that and say, hey, this, you're going to be on a real NBA contract here. You're going to have an NBA roster spot, and you can use that to potentially have a little bit of upside with a player in the long haul, where if he winds up being a rotation guy a year from now, cool. Now you've got him on a super cheap contract for 3 more years after that. That's the kind of situation I'd be looking to take advantage of. Otherwise, if it's the kind of thing where Mannion's saying, I've already been good enough, I think I'm going to hit free agent. I'd rather hit free agency sooner. I'd rather just let him run out the two-way eligibility and go from there and then see what's what. But if he's willing to do a long-term deal, I'd be open to that if I was the Lakers.
Totally agree with that. And I think the key opinion here is JJ Redick, because yeah, we had plenty of games last year where I thought Mannion could have played and he just didn't go that direction. Like, he barely played on that two-way. So that's my concern with making him on a standard deal, is like, our coach didn't even play him when he was on a two-way and when he had the opportunity. So what Redick thinks about him, I think, is going to go a long way.
It's interesting with the way the team, when you look at their actions, right? It was Mannion was last in the pecking order of the two-way players, whether it was Drew Timmy or, you know, Nick Smith Jr. when he was on one, or Kobe Bufkin. He was the last guy to get opportunities. And yet you look, Drew Timmy is not with the team. Nick Smith Jr. is not with the team. Kobe Bufkin's not with the team. And Chris Mannion was the guy who they made sure that they kept on a two-way deal. I think they like him in the long haul for this team, and perhaps his skill set wasn't exactly what they were looking for last year. But I also love the answer that he gave. I think it was Raj that asked him the other day, you know, who he models his game after. And he said, Drew Holiday and Alex Caruso. I kind of fist bumped on that. I said, yes, that is exactly what you want to hear out of this guy. And that is going to be his path if he is going to find success at the NBA level.
I also think a key here would be, for me, in terms of how I view him potentially on the roster, would be if the Lakers do, we're going to get into the forward stuff, the wing stuff. If they do some sort of move where you're dumping three or four guys and then you're creating all these extra roster spots and you sign the forward, you sign or trade for the forward, you sign or trade for the backup big, then you have an additional roster spot or two. That's where I would consider Mannion. If it is a situation where it's just getting off of simply Vando or something, right? Or like two guys, and then you need to prioritize the forward and the backup five, that's where I think Mannion doesn't really make sense. So I think it would have to be a situation where, like, he could be the Bronny replacement, technically, right? Like, if they end up flipping Bronny in one of those salary dumps, or they end up flipping Bronny to wherever LeBron goes, that's where I think he can make some sense. But with the Lakers like to have 14 guys, they like to have the flexibility with the extra roster spot. If they're only clearing one or two spots, that's where, to me, Mannion probably gets squeezed. But if it's three, four, even upwards of five guys, that's where you obviously have to replenish the back end of the roster. You got to take some swings, and I think he'd make a ton of sense in that context.
All right, let's get into what the Lakers are going to do next to build out this roster. If you look at their depth chart right now, pretty lacking at the center position, pretty lacking on the wing. In fact, we should have center options and wing options there on our show docket here. But let's start with the big last show we did. I was talking about how I was kind of excited to see DeAndre Ayton as a backup center to Walker Kessler and how he could slot into that role if mentally he was ready to be that. Here's the Lakers didn't want to find out whether or not DA was really going to be locked into that, because they ended up moving him in that deal that brings back Jaden Hardy. The Washington Wizards sent two second round picks as well. Pete, what did you think of the deal, and what do the Lakers do now at the reserve center spot?
Yeah, I think that the purpose of the deal was to get those extra second round picks to use as ballast to move in another move. It's interesting, the Lakers, as the time of this recording, have not made any of their stuff official yet. And so I know there are some people on the Utah end that want to expand out the trade and get some mid-level salaries that are tradable on their end. And obviously Lakers are working on some things, and they should still be able to aggregate Hardy if they do that, if they're operating below the cap. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was just the purpose of that, was to give Washington another big guy that they needed and then get a couple of seconds from that. And then going forward, this is the first time that they've been so far under the cap that there are different rules that I think that people don't realize how much flexibility the Lakers have, in that if a player's salary is under $7.25 million, so consider this Jake and Hardy, you can get back, you could trade Jake, who makes $6 million, for $12,250,000. You double whatever the number is, then add $250,000 to it. And then if you're in the next tier up, so say Vando's contract, you can take back their full salary plus $8.5 million. So just trading Vando out, you could bring back like $21 million in salary on that. And so Lakers certainly have some work to do, Jovan, but they've got a little more flexibility than I think people realize. And I think we're at that portion of the summer where, you know how Rob in the postseason press conference was like, there are going to be teams trying to trade out of money. I think like Denver, Orlando, Cleveland, all those teams that are kind of dancing around the aprons, that this is that portion of the summer that if they're going to capitalize on that, that's how they're going to do it.
Yeah, I think for the Lakers, they have the optionality here to, you could go below the cap with some of these things and create that additional cap space, and then either sign a player or sign and trade for a player, or just trade for a player within the confines of whatever number you carve out. Because you can't, I've seen it where people are like, oh, just, you know, sign or do this trade or this trade. It's like, you got to be within however much cap space you're creating. You have to work within those parameters. You can't just be taking the cap space away from Walker Kessler or Mamu or whatever. Like, it's all got to fit under the cap space umbrella, or they could just do all their moves and operate above the cap, and they still have flexibility under the luxury tax and the first apron where these trade rules apply, and you could still take back X amount more salary depending on which salary slot range you are in. So they do have a ton of flexibility here. I think the key is going to be, like, to me, the swing thing is, like, Vando's salary is the one that really changes the type of player that they could get, because you could theoretically get there with, like, Hardy and Laravia. I think they'd prefer to keep Laravia because among some of these guys they're looking to trade, he's like the one guy that, at least from a regular season perspective, is an innings eater that you could trust to some degree. Mm-hmm. We'll see if he can scale into a playoff context, but, like, he can be your ninth man in the regular season and just fine. He was an Iron Man last year. So I think that's the one that they would probably try to, you know, prefer to keep, but you can get into the Vando range with Hardy and Laravia, Hardy and Dalton, like, right, you're getting close there. But I think if you can get Vando in the deal plus something else, that's where you're really cooking with something. You could get even upwards into the, like, the mid-20s in terms of taking back money. So that's the one that I just, it depends on how people view Vando. Like, I think if you look at DFS's contract, which does have an extra year, though it is non-guaranteed, pretty similar money to Vando. I think he's making technically $1 million more each of the next 2 years. They had to attach 3 seconds to get off of DFS. And so, you know, I've continued to hear up until this point that, like, the going asking price is like a first round pick or that equivalent for Vando. And 3 seconds is, you know, typically around the league kind of viewed as like first round price. So that would be then all three of your seconds, and that's like to get Vando to like neutral value, to say nothing of, well, if they want like 2 seconds or something, it's going to be, well, we want the 3 seconds if Vando's in it plus other stuff, and you only have at that point a swap to throw in. So I think Vando's kind of the swing piece here, where there are ways to do it without Vando, but it would be great for the Lakers to get off of Vando, not have to wave and stretch him, or just keep him on the roster. It just, it's kind of an eye of the beholder thing, or maybe there's a team that talks themselves into, hey, with our personnel, with our system, we could fit Vando in, get the best version of him, and maybe he's an underrated asset. But at least up to what I've heard up to, like, this point, I don't know who that team is. I don't see the suitor there. So if they can't trade Vando, I do think the upside is a little bit limited in terms of the salary slot, but, you know, we'll see.
Real quick, Pete, the chat is asking if you can increase your mic volume, and we'll see if that's something you can work on there. All right. So when we look at the Lakers situation, if they are able to move off of Jared Vanderbilt, yeah, that does open up a lot of possibilities for them. The problem is they just don't have a lot of draft capital to attach to players to really go grab somebody. But very clearly, they've got to do something. I mean, right now, I look at this team and say they've got three guys that I know are NBA starters. After that, you can argue whether or not Quentin Grimes is better suited as an off-the-bench guy, which I think is probably the case, or if he's a starter. And certainly at the four spot, if we want to call it the three or the four, I've got Luka as the other one, but you need another wing on this roster that is starting caliber, and how they get there is going to be fascinating. But as we said, as of this moment, nothing has gone official. Now, I heard yesterday that this is not to sound the alarm, should nothing go official just yet, that DeAndre Ayton's got to take his physical. Jaden Hardy's got to take his physical. I don't know if you guys saw, there's footage of DeAndre Ayton arriving back in LA. Jaden Hardy is in LA now. This could simply be things are on hold right now while they get the Ayton trade all done. We know Washington has reasons why they would want to get this done sooner rather than later. This delay with things where we haven't seen anything go official yet, it doesn't necessarily mean something is afoot, but doesn't not mean that either, even if they are waiting for physicals and things like that to get done. I think the Lakers have got to get some urgency to go out there and add this final piece. And I think part of the problem too is when we look at free agency, the main piece out there is Jonathan Kuminga. And if I'm Jonathan Kuminga looking at the market right now, I'm waiting and just saying, I'm going to wait till LeBron makes his decision. Then all the teams who don't get LeBron are going to turn their attention on me, because there's nobody else out there right now really on the wing market. So I think that's a complicating factor too here. It's not so much that the Lakers are in the mix for LeBron. Certainly would be great if LeBron would have a change of heart there, but it's more that I think that Jonathan Kuminga piece is also getting frozen by the LeBron situation. And so that puts the Lakers in this kind of in between spot where you can either go try to push Jonathan Kuminga to make a decision right now. But if he's waiting for the Cavs or the Wolves or somebody like that mm-hmm. to suddenly realize they're not getting LeBron, that puts them in a bit of a holding pattern here, unless they can go find a trade to go add these wing or big man pieces that we're talking about. So Pete, this is where Rob Pelinka has really got to earn his money, right? This is this time of year. He's got to thread this needle very, very carefully. They've already made a number of moves this offseason, but clearly he still has work to do if he's going to round out this roster.
Absolutely. We've got three pretty obvious holes between the backup five spot, the starting four spot, and I'd really like somebody to be able to start and guard the ball a little bit better than Grimes, but I think that's probably the last priority there. But that's absolutely what's needed. And to your point, it's not just the Lakers that haven't done much. The league's been pretty much on hold for the last couple of days. We got the Rui signing, but mm-hmm. not a whole heck of a lot in terms of new news over the last couple of days.
How do you guys feel about that? The Lakers, a lot of Lakers fans not happy to, number one, see Rui go. Number two, see Rui go at the price that he did. And number three, see Rui go to the place that he did. Jovan, how do you feel about Rui joining the Clippers on a two-year deal, $28 million, and that funny little symbol next to that, that's a team option, which is a thing that apparently exists.
I covering the Lakers, I wasn't sure that was a thing. I had never heard of this team option before. It's obviously odd seeing Rui go to the Clippers. He clearly wanted to stay in LA, even at the expense of like not playing for a more competitive team. And some of the teams that were interested in him couldn't have offered him as much as the Clippers did. So like Minnesota, for example, could have offered him basically half of what the Clippers were offering him. And that's before factoring in their pursuit of LeBron. So I think there's some important context within that. But clearly he wanted to stay in LA, and I don't blame him. I'm an LA lifer, and I never want to leave here myself. So I get it, right? And it's good for him for getting his money. He does get the team option. I mean, it's a team option. I think they'll probably pick it up, but I'd be pretty surprised if Rui doesn't live up to that contract. So he's making like basically mid-level money for the next couple of years. And I think he got squeezed, quite frankly, by the market. I think Rui deserves to be making a little bit more than that. And had the Lakers chose a different path, there could have been a scenario where he was making a little bit more with them. But I think it's in line with, I think, his general value, more so on the low side. But Lakers are certainly going to miss him. And we were talking about last week, Rui versus Kuminga and how he viewed that. And I think I was more on the Rui side just because of the certainty with him, the stability. I think right now mm-hmm. the Lakers, if we look at the current iteration of this group, they're betting on Austin to be a true number two. Like that is, you're making that bet with that contract, with the structure of this team. Austin has to be a bona fide number two option through the regular season and into the playoffs. They are betting on Walker Kessler, biggest contract for a non-all-star center in NBA history, which is obviously inflated by the cap going up and the current numbers. But like they're making a big bet on Walker Kessler as a top 10 center and as like an all defense DPOY type guy. Quentin Grimes right now, I think they're actually making the biggest bet on Quentin Grimes. Like Quentin Grimes right now is slotted as both their primary point of attack slash wing stopper and their number three option offensively. Like that's a huge ask of Quentin Grimes, which is where I get a little uncomfortable with like that slotting. But like they're making all these bets on guys having to pan out at a certain level, that adding Rui or retaining Rui would have been at least like this, Rui's like a weighted blanket, right? Like, and you just know what you're going to get from him. And there's like a comfort level there that you're going to get the low to mid 40% shooting. You're going to get your 12 points, your 3-4 rebounds. And like Rui's going to be Rui, right? So I think they like having that stability would have been nice, but obviously that was not how it played out. He was not going to wait for them. They don't even have, they can't even like guarantee him they're going to create that much space to sign him to that type of deal, right? Like we think they can, but it's not guaranteed. So I think it was understandable from his side, like why he moved on, why the sides moved on over the last few days. And now I wouldn't say it's Kuminga or bust, but it's kind of Kuminga or bust. Like, there's some guys out there in the trade market, but we'll see if the Lakers can match what those teams would want from a draft capital perspective. But it does seem like Kuminga, if they don't get Kuminga, it's either trade market or I really don't like what else is out there in free agency.
Yeah, Trevor, I was sad to see Rui go. he was somebody that was very popular, not just on the team, but amidst the organization, just a good dude that everybody loved. And so I'm going to miss him, some great moments with him the last few years. My thing is between him, the contract that Jackson signed, Marcus, Kennard, all these guys, like if the Lakers wanted them, they'd be back. So Trevor, we got a whole new era of Lakers basketball. What do you make of the fact that all these guys left for pretty reasonable rates and Lakers pretty obviously decided that they wanted to go a different direction?
It's my big concern with everything that we've seen this summer. And I don't, and every time I bring it up, I get, oh, you're being too negative and all that. Look, Jake Fisher was just tweeting about this a couple hours ago, that what we're seeing consistently around the NBA is that guys are, that are changing teams are not getting contracts that go past a year unless you're joining the Lakers. The Lakers are the one team. As of right now, with the Donovan Mitchell extension, 13 guys have gotten contracts of 4 years or more. Four of those are coming from the Lakers out of the entire NBA. And four of those are coming from the Lakers. That's Austin Reeves, Walker Kessler, Quentin Grimes, and Sandro Mamukelashvili. When every other team in the NBA is protecting themselves against the downside, doing short-term deals, keeping optionality. Rob Pelinka's favorite word, the Lakers have said, to hell with optionality, we're locking in to these guys. So contractually, I'm very nervous about that from a contract situation. On the court, I'm excited about what this team can be offensively, especially if you were to tell me that when the dust settles, they've got the wing or two that they're missing, they've checked the box of the backup big. Okay, there's some interesting stuff going on with this group, and I'm really curious to see how on the court this vision can ultimately come together. Contractually, from a cap space side of things, I'm a little concerned about what they've done there by not really protecting themselves against the downside of these guys. But if these guys hit, we won't be complaining. But as Jovan mentioned just a moment ago, they're betting a lot on a lot of guys performing perhaps above what the market would expect them to perform at right now. If that happens, there's definitely the possibility that what looks like an overpay today is actually an underpay tomorrow. And we'll see if that vision can ultimately come together. I'm excited to see what this group can be offensively. But I'll tell you what, Jovan, I will feel much, much better if and when the Lakers have a starting caliber wing and they've got the backup big. To me, that's where suddenly the puzzle pieces to this roster will start coming together in a very real way. Until then, I'm going to be a bit nervous until they fill those roles.
I completely agree with you. I think for me, that would change how I view this offseason. Like, I think I've called it a success, and I love the Kessler trade, and I understand we've talked about getting that foundational piece and why that was so important. You wanted that long-term piece with Luka and Austin. You got the center of the future, and I think a guy who theoretically, like, if the Lakers do make a big move in the future, it could potentially be trading Austin for that wing or that forward. And like Kessler might be the guy who's like actually the number two long-term piece, just because you need that. Like, you could argue the center spot is like the second most valuable thing next to Luka in terms of like a Luka build, right? Like, you want the center, you want a certain amount of shooting and athleticism, and then you also want the secondary playmaker. But you could argue like that the center might even be more important than all of those other things. So Kessler was obviously the huge swing from LA. The price was high, but that's the going rate for a starting caliber center. And I also think when you look at like how the cap is going up and some of the new contracts that are going to be coming up the next year or two, like 2 years from now, Walker Kessler is probably going to be a league average starting center from an AAV perspective. Like, right now I think he's like 10th, right? But you're going to have Durin coming up. We'll see if he gets more. I think he probably will, maybe by a little bit. Then Wemby will have his extension, and there'll be some guys over the next couple of years where if you're talking about Walker Kessler as like the 15th highest paid center in the league, I think that's more than reasonable in a couple of years, with I think also where he'll be at that time, where I think he'll be a clear top 10 center and he'll be making less money than that value. So that's a nice value proposition, in my opinion. The rest of the stuff, I think it's a mixed bag where I think all those guys kind of got contracts at their max value. Like, you're talking about the 4 years. I think Mamu, I would have preferred a 3 year deal. Like, even just looking at he AAV wise, he's in line with a lot of guys that are similar to him or maybe even worse than him. But none of those guys got 4 year deals. Like, Robert Williams didn't get a 4 year deal. Mitchell Robinson, Jock Landale got the inflated 1 year deal. Like, those guys in that kind of 12 to 14 range all were on 1 to 3 year deals, not 4 years. So that's a huge bet on Mamu as well, that contract is going to age to a certain level. So I think for them getting that starting forward, if they get Kuminga or they pull off a PJ Washington, that's my dream target right now with all the guys that are out there. Like if they got PJ Washington, I think right now I've kind of been at like a B level for the Lakers in terms of their offseason. B plus, depending on the day, depending on the hour, that would vault this to me to like an A plus. If they somehow pulled off PJ Washington with the second round, like the limited draft capital plus basically back end of roster guys and consolidating those guys and some form of like, if you turn Vando and Dalton Connect into PJ Washington with second round picks, like I think all of a sudden Kessler, Washington, Grimes, Mamu, Sexton, that I feel totally different about compared to the current iteration. So that's where, I mean, we Pete talked about it. Like they're missing three pieces, but like the two of those pieces are pretty big. You basically said two starters. Like that's a big piece of this, right? So if you get a start, like a legit starter, even if you're kind of missing that other starter and you get a so-so backup, I still think that that's a pretty strong offseason.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that. And when it comes to turning Vando and Connect into whether it's PJ Washington or some Derek Jones Jr., if it's any of these other kind of wings that we've thrown out there, right? If you're able to do that, that is such a big step forward for the Lakers. One of the big problems they had last year is they just had too many guys on the roster that either didn't fit what JJ wanted or were not good enough to put into a game. There were just too many roster spots being clogged up by those kind of guys. And the guys the Lakers have lost this summer so far have not been those guys. It's been the guys that helped you get where you want to go. Those are the guys that they've lost. You still have the problem of roster spots and perhaps even more importantly, cap space being clogged up. If you can convert that, if Rob Pelinka can work a little magic here and take some of those guys and turn them into that piece that they need, and suddenly you are a much deeper team. You're a much more interesting team in terms of the way you have balance on this roster. It would go so far in terms of making this team take a big, big step forward. So I'd be really excited if they could do something like that. And, you know, Pete, you asked me just a moment ago what we think about all these pieces going out. I also think stylistically there's something, look, there's a reason why the Lakers are out on DeMar DeRozan. And it's not just, well, does he really fit skill set wise? Not really, but also it's age. I think the Lakers looked at last season and went, damn, we're slower than everybody else. And this is a problem. They got significantly faster. They got significantly younger. I think they're recognizing the game is skewing younger, and they've made that transition. So this is going to be a jarring transition for the Lakers with so many players going out and so many new ones coming in. But I do think conceptually going younger, that's actually, despite the contracts not following the trend around the NBA, they are following the trend that we're seeing for success in basketball right now. And that's having a team that's made up of younger and faster players.
Absolutely. And that's part of the reason why the longer term contracts for them bucking that trend is they wanted to both get younger and then also give that group with a tweak here and there to a certain runway, a certain amount of time to play together to build the continuity that they've lost by just switching over the roster as much as they have.
All right, let's get into some of our chat questions and comments in just a moment. First, we need to give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. You guys can check them out. Use the link in the description down below. The code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly in Prize Picks. Now, oh my gosh, that Argentina game was absolutely nuts. The World Cup still raging on. I'm going Kylian Mbappe, more than 1.5 shots on target, and Luis Diaz, more than 1.5 shots on target as well. If you guys want to get in on it, use the link in the description down below. They got a great promo going on right now. Play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks. Again, that code is HMA. Go check them out. All right, we had this question come in before the show began. Cam Presley said, in my eyes, the Lakers have built out their future bench depth with the intent to add starting defensive pieces in the 27-28 offseason using the MLE, the biannual exception, and expirings. You can't build a championship team in one offseason. It's sort of a Knicks-like approach to the Lakers. Jovan, what do you think about that idea that perhaps the final touches to this roster aren't added until next year, and instead, maybe we see stopgaps in the areas of need in the time being?
I agree. And I think that, I mean, we talked about that going into free agency. And I think for me, I don't want to rehash the you know, some of the stuff we talked about last week, but I think for me, I guess I view Sexton as a stopgap, sort of, especially with the context of like a 1+1. And it's sort of like he's in a position potentially right now to be like their sixth man. And so there's, I think, some real leverage against them where at $9 million, if Colin Sexton has a six man of the year type season, I mean, you're going to try to retain that guy, but he might get some wild offers next summer that you might feel uncomfortable matching. Whereas if he disappoints, he's probably opting in to that second year. And now, like that, so that, you know, Trevor, you talked about that a lot with just the leverage with player options and why it kind of works against the team there. So I think I like totally with Grimes and Mamu, again, if the long-term slotting is like sixth man, seventh man, I love that. I think the current iteration of the roster where I've had a little bit of an issue with it is they're potentially slotted as the two starters. And I just don't think that's like good enough. I think where I diverged, I guess, was just that I felt if you were going to go a potential stopgap solution, I would have prioritized a starting level wing defender over a sixth man backup guard type, right? Like it's either way, you were going to have one of those holes, right? If you went with Marcus or Kelly Oubre, well, then we'd be talking about, hey, the Lakers need a backup ball handler. But I think that's less of a priority than the starting wing defender role. And I think it's easier to find a cheap backup point guard who could just run the show for 15 minutes than it is to be like, okay, this is a guy we feel comfortable throwing out against San Antonio or OKC or New York and then playing 30 minutes in a game defensively. So that's where I guess like my, I understand, like I felt, we talked about it, it was going to be a multi-transaction cycle build. This was not going to be a finished product from day one. I just wanted to see, I just felt like, I guess the way they did it, prioritizing a bench guard and viewing that as like a better long-term or, you know, short-term stopgap, but potential long-term piece at the expense of like, you need defense in the starting group. And if you don't have that, I just don't think you can contend. And so that's where I disagreed with that. But I understand that. Like I think if the long-term play here is you have three starters, you need two new starters, and then you have those three guys as your top bench guys, I totally understand that. And I think that's a smart build. I just think I'm curious to see how they approach actually getting those first two guys, because I think as long as they don't have those guys, it's kind of a half-baked roster. And ultimately, I don't think they could compete with the top teams in the league.
And that's why I think they need to get one of those guys this offseason. I agree generally with the premise of the question that Rome isn't going to be built in a day, but I do think that they need to get either that starting forward or that guy that bumps Grimes to the bench. And I think that just in terms of the gap on this team, it's really that forward spot. So I'm hoping for two out of those three holes get filled, Trevor, of like the backup five spot and probably that starting four spot, knowing that it's going to take another couple transaction cycles to get the whole thing done. So I do agree with Cameron there.
Yeah, I agree. I am very much against kicking the can. We've talked about that. And if you can find a way to add that player now, absolutely do it. Especially, you know, I really don't want to go into next summer with Luka a year away from free agency saying, okay, Luka, we might be able to figure this out and add the final pieces to this roster right now. That puts a ton of pressure on getting those moves done next summer as well. But I also want to throw this in about Colin Sexton. So I did a little bit of digging. And I mentioned last show that I've been a fan of his game. I think he's been a bit underrated, at least as an offensive player, due to his shooting efficiency that I really, really love. Don't love his defensive game. Not a good defensive player. Question the fit on the Lakers. But Colin Sexton, in his last full season with the Utah Jazz, in which he shared with Walker Kessler, which was the season before last one, he actually had more assists by passing to Walker Kessler than anyone else on the entire Utah Jazz team, despite the fact that he did not spend the majority of his minutes or the most minutes on the team on the floor with Walker Kessler. He was force-feeding Walker Kessler over and over and over again. So I think when we look at Colin Sexton, we also have to add that context to this, that Colin Sexton might be a piece the Lakers thought, hey, we could use another guard who's a blur who can get us paint touches all day long. But also, how much of him being in LA is as a security blanket to your biggest acquisition of the summer being Walker Kessler? How much of the Colin Sexton addition is, hey, Walker, we went and got the guy that loves nothing more than dropping the ball off to you for easy dunks? I wonder how much of this is making the transition for Walker Kessler that much easier as an important bonus to what skills Colin Sexton brings to the team.
I love this point because, like, there's so little existing chemistry on the team. Like, everybody's going to have to build up that, oh, you like the ball here, you like catching the ball on the seams or off the seams, just all of that. That just having a little bit that's already there is going to help out a ton.
All right, let's get into this next question here. Oh, the Argentina comeback. That was unreal. Messi magic. Team outlook, if they get Kuminga and Carr hits. Where are you guys at on Jonathan Kuminga? Like, if they got him, would you say box checked? You've got the long-term solution here? Like, how would you, or would he slot more into stopgap, maybe kind of wait and see type territory if they land him?
So, you know, I said right now I'm probably at a B, and I think like PJ Washington would be an A plus. I mean, it would dramatically change how I view the offseason, because I think that's a legitimate starter. He's locked up at a pretty reasonable price. He's got the proof of concept with Luka, and I think he can be that. Like, he's an ideal non-all-star starting four, in my opinion. He checks, like, his defensive metrics are really elite. He could play in small ball looks. You look at his defensive positional profile. He can guard 3 through 5 at a really solid level. And perimeter ISO defense grades out as an A on B-ball index. Like, he checks a lot of the boxes that you would want from that position. The shot's obviously a little inconsistent, but playing off of Luka, Austin, I think he'll get plenty of quality looks. Kuminga, though, it's a mystery box. And I've heard Pete talk about this with, like, just the fact that he never clicked in Golden State. And you have, like, Steve Kerr, who's, I think, obviously one of the most successful coaches of the past decade, and your Team USA coach, and, like, just some of the minds that have been out on Kuminga is a red flag. And just, I think you survey the league, you're going to get a bunch of mixed opinions on him. But I would say more often than not, it's kind of skewing negative. And so if this many people are out on him or don't really see, like, what he is in a winning context, that's a bit concerning. And it's another gamble that we're talking about, where we're talking Austin, Kessler, Grimes, like, all these guys have to hit. Now Kuminga becomes another guy of, he can hit. And if he hits, like, the ceiling is really high. I think he could arguably be, like, the highest upside guy they could potentially acquire in this transaction cycle at that forward spot. But there's also a downside of, if he goes back to some of the ball stopping and ISO hunting, and he views himself as, well, no, I'm the number three guy ahead of Grimes, and, like, this is my opportunity to show what I could do in you know, a starting context, and he doesn't buy in defensively, like, that's where it starts to go south. So I think Kuminga is, like, a huge swing, and it could go in either direction if it hits. Like, to me, I think he's got to commit to being the Aaron Gordon, Andrew Wiggins, where they start their career, they're the lottery pick, they have certain aspirations of being an all-star, being a certain scorer, but they eventually realize the defense and the dirty work and doing the little things are what's going to get them to the next level. And I think he could be a Gordon Wiggins type on a championship team. It's just, is he going to view himself that way and commit to that role and doing those things? And I don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell you if he's going to, but I would say if they get Kuminga, because of just them needing talent and them needing forward depth, and them, in my opinion, like, maybe having 7 guys I would trust in even a regular season context, Kuminga would bump it from, like, a B to a B plus for me. But I don't think it goes any higher than that without knowing just, like, how he's going to commit and buy in. Like, there's a lot of DeAndre Ayton here, and we saw with Ayton overall, it was a plus depending on the contract. That would also determine how I view this. But there was also the nights where DeAndre Ayton just didn't have it, and he got his butt kicked, or he kind of quit on the team, and it was discouraging. So that's where I kind of view Kuminga.
The idea of getting Kuminga and Carr hitting, I mean, the athleticism of your rotation just goes way up. And I already think that this team is a good deal faster than last year's version already. Losing Jackson hurts. I would love to get, like, I think Stein was talking about Diabate possibly being an option in terms of being on the market. Like, I'd love to get Diabate out of Charlotte, and he's one of the faster centers in the league. But if both of those guys hit between Kuminga and Carr, like, yeah, your athleticism goes way up. I also think that I don't like having the same weakness in players that play positions next to each other, right? So if you've got Luka at the 3 and you've got Kessler at the 4, on paper, I would love an athlete at the 4 spot. So that's why, for me, Trevor, I wouldn't characterizing him as a stopgap is a little too pessimistic for my taste, just because of how young he is. And the one argument against the Golden State thing for me is they just play basketball pretty differently than a lot of teams do because of just the unique jump shooting talent in their system that I think on a more heliocentric team where you give the ball to Luka, it sort of slots Kuminga into more natural things that he'll be good at. But yeah, if both of those guys hit, I think just we have a night and day difference from last year's team. Are you a Kuminga guy, Trevor?
I'm generally not. I think there is a world where he could fit on this team. If we can, like, I would be firmly on the side of, if you had a choice between Rui or Kuminga, I would be firmly on the Rui side because of the consistency that you have there. But I do think that there is, based on what's on the market right now, I'm definitely a Kuminga guy based on what's on the market right now. He is the best option out there. And the fact that he gives you some upside is very, very enticing. I also think you dig into the numbers a little bit. Look, there's a reason why Atlanta didn't pick up their team option on him. That was $24 million. That's a lot. But I also look at the metrics and you could see that the Atlanta Hawks gave up almost 10 points per 100 possessions less with Jonathan Kuminga on the floor. Now, that's not been the case over the course of his career. That's, you know, small sample size and all of that, but perhaps there is something defensively that can be tapped into there. You add that to the athleticism that he brings to the floor. You add him running the wing with Luka having the ball in the middle of the court, and I could see the way some things could work well. But I think Jovan's point about the mentality is going to be really important. It does a 23-year-old, we've talked about, is a 27-year-old DeAndre Ayton going to really commit to being that backup role? Is a 23-year-old Jonathan Kuminga, who, based on all of his interactions with the Warriors, very clearly believed that he is a star in the making in the NBA, is that guy going to fill a specific role on this Lakers team and be willing to sacrifice in the way the team will need him to do? I think that's going to be a critical unknown here for how he could potentially fit. But based on the options out there right now, 100%, it's Jonathan Kuminga that you would go with and gamble on the upside, give him a shot and say, you know what? Here's the Hollywood spotlight. Here's a starting job. Welcome to the team. And off you go. And I think that's where you'd have to go with Jonathan Kuminga. And then you hope that, again, they're gambling on a lot, but you got to hope the upside hits right now. As far as Carr, I think Cameron Carr, especially early, he's more of a two than a three, although he may adjust to be more of a three as his career goes on.
Yeah, I think the physicality and strength, like, it stood out. Where, like, even coming off screens, you'll see guys kind of hold him and whatnot. He could struggle to create that separation. So I think right now he projects more as a two.
All right, let's check this out. Are you guys concerned about the lack of vets or leadership on this team? Austin Reeves right now is the veteran, the oldest player on the team.
He's Unc.
Uncle Austin. Yep.
Uncle Austin. Jovan, is this something that could hold the Lakers back, not having more veteran leadership on this squad?
Potentially. I think it does put a lot on Luka and Austin to, I think, be more of vocal leaders, where those guys, like, I'm not in the locker room, but in terms of, like, in when they're having these team meetings and whatnot, but when I'm in the locker room and just kind of seeing how, like, the group is relatively quiet. And this is something I've talked about the last couple of years. Like, it is a more introverted group. And I think going back a couple seasons ago when DFS got there, DFS was like this shot of energy into the locker room. He also had the rapport with Luka, which made that transition easier. Last year, Marcus was that guy. And on paper, I don't think the Lakers currently have that guy. Like, is it going to be Sexton? Is it going to be Grimes? Like, you know, Grimes to me is also a little bit more of a laid back, introverted guy. So I think that that's sort of the personality of the team. I think that's also led to JJ taking on a little bit more of that role in terms of being the vocal leader. But certainly, I will say with Kessler, one thing I've noticed with him on film is Kessler communicates a ton. And I think Kessler is great at just the backline coverages and the reads and the calls. And so I think from a defensive perspective, Kessler could be that defensive captain who's commanding LA in that regard. But in terms of, like, the locker room, the guy who's going to, and also we can't overlook LeBron's voice in all this, right? Like, when LeBron talks, people listen, right? Like, Pat Bev had the quote from a few years ago with the bubble. He was like, LeBron said we're going to stay. So everyone was like, we're going to stay. And, like, he carries that type of weight. So I think having, you know, even if he maybe took a step back with it becoming more of Luka's team, I think LeBron still carried a certain voice in the locker room. And when he spoke, people listened. Marcus was sort of the guy galvanizing everybody and communicating and making sure that, you know, he was big on motivating DA, right? Like Marcus always feeding DA, always pumping him up in the media. Like that was a big thing for Marcus. I think they need that type of guy. I don't know, again, who that guy, maybe it's Sexton. I think he's like the candidate to me that, you know, if he buys into that type of role could potentially have that impact. But on paper, it's a much younger team with like not a lot of playoff experience. Sexton and Kessler have never been in the playoffs. Mamu's been once, Grimes has been twice. Going from a more veteran heavy bunch of playoff appearances for those guys to like guys who haven't really been there, it's just a real shift. So yeah, I mean, I see the downside, but I also think it's going to be now on the incumbents like Luka, Austin, and JJ. I think all collectively have to do a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. And whenever you've got LeBron on your team, LeBron is your leader, as you spoke to. Kobe had a similar affect to him as well, even after the Achilles tear. It's like, that's the team that you're going to be. And so I'm also curious to see kind of players grow into their own in this respect. But I do think we've taken a step back in this respect. And even just on a functional on the court type of basis, you're five being able to communicate is super important because that's the position where everybody, you can see everybody in front of you. But just the same, your guard that talks the way that Marcus did and having somebody on the perimeter that can really call out what's going on, it's just super important. And so this is a great question and certainly one of the concerns I have this year.
You know, there is a vacuum there from a leadership perspective, and we'll see who steps into that. Luka was certainly a leader on a team that went to the finals, and so I don't think his leadership can be, you know, dismissed out of hand. Obviously, he's going to have to be in a leadership role, but JJ as well, you know, Austin, they're going to have to be in that leadership role initially for this team. By the way, you know, I don't know what the relationship is like, but word is out there the DFS is not sticking in Charlotte, and they're probably going to move on from him. Good buddies with Luka. I don't know. I mean, just something to consider if he does wind up hitting.
I'd be pretty surprised with how that situation ended.
I would as well. I would as well. But maybe another wing out there. All right. Vando will have to be waived and stretched. That's the only way. I mean, it's an eye the beholder thing, but most likely teams are going to want more than what the Lakers are going to want to pay if it means clearing Vando's salary off the books.
My one pushback to this is that there are other teams that have even more salary to get off of, that it's one of the ways that if the Lakers are helping alleviate another team, that instead of getting a first round pick back themselves for taking a contract off of their books, yeah, that you can sort of bridge that gap of like, yeah, you've got Christian Brown, for example, on 4 or 5 more years or however long his extension is. And well, we don't want to take all that back, but here's Vando for 2 years. That I think that the class of teams they're going to be dealing with, Jovan, are these teams that are looking to get off money, that it can be sort of a your problem for my problem type of thing. That I think there are more options than just the wave and stretch, even though that would be my number one, like I think is likeliest.
100% agree. I've been talking about this. I've used Christian Brown or Miles Turner prior to the Kessler trade as examples of, okay, like ideally you just get off the Vando contract. If you can't just dump it, you also have the wave and stretch option, which I'm a little bit more on the side of being against it, just because I think that $5 million with how expensive the Lakers are going to get, like think about where the contracts are going to be 2 years from now with Luka's potential new extension, plus Kessler, plus Austin, plus they have Grimes and Mamu locked up. Like you could obviously move some of that money around. I'm not saying you can't. It's just when you start looking at like already next year, I think going into the summer, they're going to be at like 190 plus million in salary, and the cap is going to go up, but that's going to continue to rise. And so that 5 million might not matter now, but there could be a situation where you're hard capped at the first apron and you're really hard capped even lower because of that 5 million for Vando's contract. So I'd be a little hesitant to put that on my books for the next, you know, this year plus 4 more years. That's a pretty long time. And with the new CBA, it's just you don't really want dead money, in my opinion. That's where like Milwaukee is really screwed. But I think if you can't take back that player, like I'm probably higher on Christian Brown than consensus, because I think he just had an injury ravaged season and a really down shooting season. You look at the three previous seasons, he was above average 3-point shooter and had been progressing like 36, 38, 40%. The year he gets the contract, 15.6 rebounds, shot 40% from three, and was a pretty good defender. So like if that player is still there, and last year was more of an anomaly where he just had a down year with the injuries, like I mean, it's still probably a slight overpay, but he could really help you either as a starter or as a high-level bench guy. So I think that is the type of thing that they should be looking for if they can't just outright get off Vando. I think I would prefer taking back some subpar money compared to just wave and stretching him, because you could still move that around. The wave and stretch is like, that's on your books, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, you have to have incentive to do it. You have to know, what is the move that we're waving and stretching him for? Is this worth it in order to do it? I do agree that maybe you could turn Vando as bad money into different bad money that might fit a bit better. Christian Brown being a great example. Maybe you can do something like that with him. We'll see what Rob Pelinka can ultimately muster up here. But we're going to get to a few more questions and comments. First, let's give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is SeatGeek. I believe Pete has something to say about them.
Let's go.
So I'm going to Florida in a few weeks, and a couple of weeks after that, it's my girlfriend's birthday. She loves live music, so I want to take her to a concert, but I've never been to any of the venues out there, which is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. Major League Baseball is in full swing, and you can now get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek. SeatGeek has a great feature that rates these tickets on a scale of 1 to 10, with the green meaning that it's a better deal, and the red meaning that it's a worse one. This helps me out a ton looking for the best tickets at venues I've never been to before. Plus, every ticket is backed by the buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with the promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure to click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you to SeatGeek.
Let's go.
Pete De Niro over there.
What's that face there, Pete? Come on. That was a good ad read.
I was trying my best. Thank you. You're very kind, Trevor. You're great at those, man. So thank you.
That was well done. Well done. If you guys want to go check out SeatGeek again, that code is COLLECTIVE10. That's awesome. It's like now you're official. Now you've done that.
I know.
Now,
yeah.
Now you're official.
That was the hazing process.
Right. That's it right there. All right. Let's go to this one. Messi, the GOAT. He is absolutely incredible. We still have way too many guys that can't play in a playoff game. Defense is a problem. Overall, we lack a starting five, but I'm patient and I'm trying to stay helpful. Thank you for the show. Well, thank you for being here. But that's the one thing I keep going back to. Every time I look at the roster and I'm like, oh, but they don't have this, but they don't have that. They're not done. There are still moves to be made. What will those moves be? We will see. I'm still on pins and needles expecting something in the coming days here. But this team, very much not done. I'm trying to withhold judgment until we see what this group really looks like when they're fully put together.
Yeah, that's why
Go ahead.
That's why I've just tried to evaluate these moves more on a, like, do I like this player or not? And sort of in the general idea rather than a, how do they fit on the team? Cause I think the cake's still baking right now.
I think one of the interesting things here with how this all plays out is there's the order of operations with the DeAndre Ayton trade, right? Because one of the things that not many people had been talking about was if you actually look at the salary that the Lakers had committed to the three players they were acquiring with cap space, they had actually overspent their cap space and they needed to shed some additional money. So the DeAndre Ayton, Jaden Hardy trade needs to be either like the first or second thing they do in terms of the order of operations here to clear that additional 2.1, which gets them then enough space to fit all those moves into their cap space. But one of the things kind of looming, or there's a couple things looming with all this, is that, like, one, Washington has a trade exception with the Kelly Olynyk trade to San Antonio, where that expires on Thursday. That expires July 9th, and they don't have to slide DA into that exception, but if they do, they then create a second exception for Jaden Hardy because they would technically be using that exception for DA. So Washington has some incentive here to do this over the next couple days. But then looming over everything is LeBron and that sweepstakes, and any team that has a shot at LeBron theoretically would be in on Kuminga just for the need of another power forward, like, you know, maybe Cleveland or something like that isn't, but Minnesota, right? Like, if you can't get LeBron, you then pivot toward Kuminga be our starting four, fit in, like we could protect you defensively with Gobert and McDaniels, like whatever. So that I think is like this tension right now where LeBron is looming over everything, that there's a bit of a holding pattern until the LeBron sweepstakes is resolved. According to Rich Paul, like it could take days, it could take a week, like who knows how long that's going to take. Trevor said it might be the most inconvenient time. So it'll be Friday night at Summer League.
Yeah.
And then you also have this tension with like the Wizards and them probably wanting to get this done by like Thursday. So I'm fascinated to see how long this drags out, because theoretically it could drag out till August, right? Like it could drag out indefinitely in theory, but I do think there's a little bit of a deadline here, like later in the week, and we'll see how, you know, that all plays out.
So Bruce threw in Jaden Hardy is a head scratcher. Unless Bronny's not on the team.
Just, still at $6 million though?
No, I agree. And I would prefer, I would have rather he was Justin Champagne or someone like that. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying if something goes on with Bronny, suddenly Jaden Hardy makes a bit more sense. Yes, he's another combo. I would prefer he was someone else.
He's not a defender too. Like right. That's, I guess, we talked earlier about Sexton with Kessler, and I totally agree with the chemistry and continuity component. I think my one thing with that is I do wonder how much he's actually going to play with Kessler, because I don't know if you can go Sexton, Austin, Luka a ton just because of the defense with Sexton, correct, right? And then if you have Hardy in there as well, like it's ideally that small guard that you're having as like an additional ball handler out there is a defender of a certain level. Ideally, they're an above average defender, and that's not Sexton or Hardy. So that's where I see a little bit of a fit limitation there, at least on the defensive side.
100%. 100%. All right. Radically Vanda, except Vanda won't be traded. My therapist.
We're here for you.
JJ on Mind the Game talked about preferring high volume, low efficiency threes over low volume, high efficiency threes. Do you agree? Does this roster lean more towards that? Guys, I do think, and Pete, you can tell me a little bit about this, but I do think that the Lakers' three-point volume is going to go way up compared to last year.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that to Redick's point, he was making a broader point about like pull-up threes and sort of the increase in volume and efficiency. He was talking about how a couple of years ago that was a 33% shot, and now it's a 35% shot. And it seems like it's a small difference, and it is, but what it does is it opens up sort of the drive and kick. If you can self-create that type of shot, there've been a lot of studies about this, that's one of the most important skills that there are, is that ability to hit off of the dribble. And adding Luka has been a huge boon toward that. And I think it's one of the things that Austin can add a little more to his game, is just that ability to pull up from three and hit a step back, especially because he's such a threat with his speed attacks, that's sort of a natural counter. If you get a guy on their heels a little too much, as Austin often does, you plant that front foot, step back, and now you're in business. This is a shot that Colin Sexton can hit. It's a shot that Quentin Grimes can hit. And so Lakers had that from their top guy. Austin does it a bit. Now they've got a lot more of that on the roster. And so you compare that to, say, you know, talk low volume, high efficiency threes. Those are the shots that Rui often took, right? Which is the catch and shoot threes, but not off of a lot of relocations. And so it's more about like the secondary effects of what it opens up than the shot itself as that lower efficiency type of three, but it does open up just some great looks and gets you into the blender a bit more.
Yeah. Look, whenever I think about the volume component to 3-point shooting, I think about Marc Gasol, who shot 41% from three in that last season as a Laker. Did teams really defend him much behind the 3-point line? No, not like you would expect a 41% 3-point shooter to get defended, because he didn't shoot very many of them. Didn't take it that often. You've got to be a threat to take the shot and knock down enough of them, and that's going to stretch the defense. And that's, you know, we got that comment a couple weeks ago from Luka about, I want 3-point shooters on the team to make it more difficult to double me. You've got to be not just a decent percentage, but also you've got to be a real threat to where teams feel like you are going to take the shot and you're not going to hesitate. That was part of the Lakers, I don't want to say frustration, but part of the work with Luke Kennard over this past few months was about getting him to be a little bit more aggressive taking that shot. And JJ making the point, hey, look, we'd rather have you be not the best percentage-wise 3-point shooter in the NBA, but at a higher volume, we'd prefer that guy over the best percentage 3-point shooter that doesn't shoot a high enough volume. I agree. I think that's going to be a step forward for the Lakers. Their 3-point percentage may not be as good, but their 3-point volume should go up, and that can really pay dividends in terms of their overall floor spacing. This one said, trade Bronny, Jake, and Hardy to teams who need depth for 1 second-round pick each. Sign Kuminga to a $16 million deal. Trade Vando, Dalton Kanect, and 5 second-round picks for Keegan Murray. Jovan, I don't see the value coming on any. Like, I don't see those guys fetching that value. I hope I'm wrong.
I don't.
Though, I think that'll be great.
I think you could flip Bronny for a second-round pick to whichever team LeBron goes to, right? Like, that's, yep. I mean, the Lakers, I think, have to get a second-round pick out of that at least, and we'll see if it's protected or not. But I think you have to get that for him. Jake, I guess it depends on the team. Like, if you just need another wing, adding in a $6 million wing who can play in the regular season, I think that could have potential second-round value that might be a top 40, top 45 protected second. I don't know with Jake. Hardy, I'm a little... like we saw they had to attach 2 seconds to Hardy to get DA. So Hardy's another one where I don't know if you view that as necessarily a pot. Like, to me, I don't see where he scales into like a competitive team in a rotation role. And then in terms of Keegan Murray, maybe they want to get off that money, but I don't know if that is enough. Because again, I would almost view this as like the 3 seconds is probably getting you to neutral value. Then you're offering Vando at neutral value and DK plus 2 seconds for Keegan Murray. I think that's a little low for Keegan Murray. So I think you could do the Kuminga part here, depending on how, you know, if you're just outright dumping this. But I don't know if you're getting that. I would say you're not getting that amount of second round picks, and you're also not getting Keegan Murray for that package.
You know, the Lakers and Kings haven't traded with each other since the 1970s.
They they almost did, right?
Oh, they
the Buddy Hill thing.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, and yep.
Well, yeah, the fork in the road that would have been interesting to see if Buddy Hield was a Laker instead.
We do have a little bit of news here. Anthony Slater, the Lakers are the most active in pursuit of unrestricted free agent Jonathan Kuminga, but have not yet made an enticing enough offer for him to commit, according to sources. There is an article on it that I can peruse real quick here and see if there's any other details. Your initial thoughts, guys? The Lakers have not made an enticing enough offer for Jonathan Kuminga to commit, but they are the most active team in pursuit of him.
I think with how the situation is currently played out, that checks out. I mean, the Lakers have not gotten off the money yet to add him. And I wonder if right now the current options, especially if it's not getting off of Vando, might just not be like, you know, maybe you're getting off of $8 to $10 million and you're going to Kuminga and, hey, we can sign you to a 1+1, $8 or $10 million deal. Like, that's probably not moving the needle enough for him. So I think that checks out with my current read on the situation.
There's always the option to do a sign and trade, right? If you traded one of Hardy or Jake, mm-hmm. like one of the things about Jake, you were talking about him as the innings eater, Jovan, is if the Lakers do make a trade with the team and they need to alleviate some salary from someone else, all these teams that we're talking about are pretty good teams that ideally don't just want to trade you a good player for all the other crap on our team, right? Like the idea of Laravia being able to, yeah, this guy could play a little bit as a backup, as an eighth, ninth guy that can be helpful. I think that that's there. But Trevor, I don't know if you remember Kendall Gill back in the day. Will always have some animosity toward him because whenever I hear a player's name in these rumors enough, and it's like, well, why isn't a deal done? I wonder to what degree the Lakers are being used as leverage in this situation as well. So that's been sort of pinging on my radar with the Kuminga situation.
That's fair.
And I think like a lot of
We just saw it with Durin, right?
Right.
Sure.
Right. And this has happened all like, the big bad Lakers are going to get your guy if you don't offer a little bit more. That whenever we hear this amount of smoke about a player, it's almost always coming from the player agent type of side rather than the Lakers telling everybody and anybody, hey, we can't wait to get Jonathan Kuminga. That's not really how they roll. So this is as much as I'd be excited at this point to be able to add him. I do sort of wonder, are we being used as leverage?
Well, and this is coming from an article written by Anthony Slater, who primarily covers the Golden State Warriors. Yep. Here's some of the details. I just perused the article real quick here. Kuminga has met with the Lakers. They pitched him on the vision of being a high minutes wing next to Luka in a spacious on-court environment that's conducive to his skill set, and then said the Lakers went out and used up their cap space, though, leaving nothing left over really for Kuminga. That didn't stop the Lakers' pursuit of Kuminga. Multiple members of the organization, including players, have reached out to express their desire to him to join them, and Pelinka's remained in touch with them, with the agent. They've reiterated to Kuminga his importance to what the Lakers are building. Kuminga and his agent have not jumped at it because they believe there are still avenues to better deals as the offseason dominoes continue to fall. That's obviously the LeBron situation that we've been talking about. That could involve sign and trade opportunities with the Hawks. Atlanta remains open to facilitating a move that would help Kuminga keep his bird rights and get a contract he desires, but the Hawks would need to be incentivized for such a move, and then the Lakers, their contracts, they can move out to make something like that work. We've talked about that. And there's a world where Kuminga could return to the Hawks on more of a team-friendly structure as well. The Kings have checked back in on Kuminga as well, but are handcuffed financially, so getting there is tough.
So that last, or one of those last parts of like the Lakers contract situation, because it is implying obviously with Atlanta, if you're doing a sign in trade, that you would need to send something. So I think that's like one of the things the Lakers are trying to figure out right now, is they're trying to get off salary, but they're also trying to, if it is going to be a sign in trade at a higher number, how do we still have some draft capital to send to Atlanta that will entice them to play ball with us? So it's going to be interesting to see how that to me then, it's more unlikely that Vando is in the salary dump, because if you're having to use all this draft capital to get off of Vando, then you don't really have that left over to trade for Kuminga. Whereas if it's lower level players or players who aren't going to cost as much, then it's, I think, potentially easier to retain those assets and then flip it.
Should the Lakers do that? If it's a sign, like we've talked about, do you dump salary at a cost, but should the Lakers be looking to surrender significant amounts of their remaining assets to get a bigger deal for Jonathan Kuminga and fully commit to him, versus what we've been talking about of, hey, cap space is drying up, maybe they open up a little bit of extra wiggle room, here's a little bit below market value, maybe you can rehab your value and we'll see how it all goes. If we're talking about a sign to trade with the Hawks, we're talking about a long-term commitment here to Jonathan Kuminga and surrendering assets to make it happen. How comfortable are you guys with that?
I don't feel great about that. I do wonder what's the Lakers' best alternative to Kuminga. I think that's going to inform a lot of this. A few shows ago, Jovan, you asked me if I wanted to trade 2 first for Walker Kessler. I was like, no, not really, unless I'm getting a way lower salary. And they did get a good deal, I think, in terms of the AAV on that and the starting salary. But it was also what's your alternative there, where I got over it real quick, when it was like,
it was going to be Mitchell Robinson.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Where it was like, all of a sudden that second pick doesn't seem so bad. So that's kind of where I'm at, is it sort of depends on what the alternative is. But we were just talking about, I don't really want to commit sight unseen to Kuminga to a long-term deal.
I guess, what do you guys think is, or what's the level of player that you would settle for in terms of an alternative? Like, obviously, I think PJ Washington, Derek Jones Jr., guys like that would make a ton of sense. But I mean, I was looking, like, okay, there's Cam Johnson, Christian Brown, Lou Dort. I don't think Herb Jones really fits. I mean, maybe he fits with like the wing defender mold, but I think with the current group, I don't know if you just slot Herb as like the four. Technically, he'd be more of a wing stopper, Grimes would be the point of attack guy, Luka would play the four defensively, but I don't know if, I feel like they want higher level offensive guys. So I guess, where are you guys at with what's like the baseline level of player you would accept to be the starting four moving forward, or at least for this year?
Yeah, I think it needs to be somebody, frankly, if you're going to go to Luka and say, hey, you want to be happy to be here, right? Like, it needs to be somebody along that Derek Jones Jr. kind of level. It's got to be somebody that makes sense for this roster. Maybe Kuminga has the upside to get there, but I don't think you can go add. You've already got a lot of question marks. I don't think you ideally want to be in a spot where you're taking a guy, a Zion Williams, somebody like that, and you're saying, hey, we're rolling the dice on this guy, and maybe over the course of the season, he can become a starting caliber player. I think you got to feel pretty good about that player being, even if it is a Christian Brown and we're nominally calling Luka the four defensively, mm-hmm. that's probably preferable to one of these kind of, we're going to go grab a veteran minimum guy type that we think maybe at some point could turn into this, and then we're just going to roll the dice, or better than we're going to roll with Mamu as the starting four or something to that effect. I think if they are not able to get Jonathan Kuminga, and it's sounding like if you're reading between the lines on what's out there right now, Kuminga wants more money than what the Lakers can offer and wants to try to push for a sign and trade with the Atlanta Hawks, which require the Lakers to give up assets. Okay, well, if we're at a point where you got to give up a bunch of assets to get to Jonathan Kuminga, who else can you go get? Is it a PJ Washington? Is it a player that we think might be a little bit less volatile in terms of how they ultimately fit and what the, kind of a known quantity they are coming onto this roster? It can't be a roll of the dice, though. And I think Jonathan Kuminga is that floor in terms of how much I'm willing to gamble. Any more of a gamble than that, and I'm looking elsewhere.
For me, I'm hoping it's somebody that's been a starter before and like Trevor's saying, isn't just some GI sure hope and wish. One guy that hasn't been brought up, it's on one of those cap space or around the apron teams, is Max Strus. I do wonder what Stephen A. Smith would think about us acquiring Strus or Christian Brown, but I'd a little more in on Brown since he's a better athlete, but he would fit the aesthetic. Just somebody that's been a starter on this Lakers squad. I'm sorry, guys. I couldn't help but think of it.
I did a breakdown last night. He was on my list. I think I'm maybe like, I don't know. He's a good, I mean, he's a solid defender. I don't know if I'd go as far as to say good, but I would say solid.
And he's a three, right? He's not somebody that's going to build
He's not as much of a four.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I guess if you're emptying the clip for Kuminga, I'd rather just empty the clip for PJ Washington or DJJ. Yeah. And there's just the question of does Dallas or the Clippers play ball? But
which they may not. They may not. We'll see. All right. Last one I want to get to here. Pete, this is Rob, the Lakers summer intern. Miss you, my guy.
Oh.
Is an Andrew Wiggins trade possible? Miami needs shooting. How about Dalton Connect, Jake, and all the second round picks?
Robert, great to hear from you, man. I hope you're doing well. Would love to know what you're up to these days. Wiggins, I think, probably stays. Don't you think, guys? I think that they sort of need that guy in Miami.
Yeah, I think the talent, like they're going with more of a top heavy build, right? Just based on how the roster is structured. And I think the drop off from Wiggins to DK or Jake, or, you know, both, it's too steep to be offset by the second round picks, in my opinion.
Agreed. I don't see Wiggins ultimately moving. Unfortunately, would like him on the Lakers, but don't see that ultimately happening. All right, guys, we've got a bunch of super chats we didn't get. I'm thinking maybe next show, depending on what happens between now and then, mm-hmm. we'll have to commit to a full Q&A show and just focus on our chat here for our next episode.
Good with me.
All right. Cool. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Please make sure you do hit the subscribe button. I've got the super chat saved. We'll kick off next show getting into those. Again, subscribe right here on YouTube. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts as well. Till next time, everybody. See ya and stay safe.